What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Who was within striking distance of hostmanship this week, Ben?
There were moves being made over on the Patreon page, and I feel like I never want to harp on it. You know, I want to harp on it the appropriate amount of time, you know, at the beginning of each episode, because, I mean, like, it's a feud that's been going on for nearly 150 episodes now. So it's like, yeah, people get it.
They get it.
But also, there was, we had a new stovetop popcorn, which was 100 votes in Jay's favor, arrive like 2 hours before this very recording session. So we weren't sure whether or not the table would be turned. It wasn't turned.
It wasn't, but it was close. It was 40 votes off.
Yes, and what was very interesting about this particular sign-up was it was like the person who signed up was so branded around popcorn culture that I was like, was this potentially an error? Like, I'm not sure if I'm, like, it was, I think it was like Little Kernels was the name of the person who...
I think they were Little Kernels space DOT space com. So littlekernels.com.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, like, you know, it's spelled out, and it was kind of one of these things where I was like, well, this is... it's, I need to check into it because I want to see, you know... like, I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
But, like, as we're getting our count together, as we're doing our due diligence,
right,
turns out, completely real thing, and littlekernels.com has not only become one of our top-tier patron people, but they have also created a, like... very good website.
Yeah, about popcorn culture.
Called littlekernels.com.
Littlekernels.com. Oh, man. Yeah, I was looking through it, and at first I was like, okay, this looks nice. And then I kept clicking through, and I was like, yeah, that should be in there. Oh, it's fun they included that. Hey, this is... oh, look, this is a whole log. They had an entire section called the Lincoln Logs, which just references every single fun fact about Abe Lincoln we've ever said and which episode it came in and what the source was.
That's so... it is so incredible. It's so incredible. So if it is not a website that we have created. This is not sponsored, other than the fact that they are a patron, but if you want to go and check out littlekernels.com, it is cool.
It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. Yeah, yeah. The one true unofficial website of popcorn culture.
It's pretty perfect. Anyway, we'll be sure to include that in this week's episode of the show notes.
I'm curious to see how it evolves. Also, wait a minute. Oh gosh, I'm on the wrong pop doc, Ben.
Oh
wow.
My goodness.
Okay,
because
we were talking about Lincoln, and it inspired me to try and find another fun thing about Abe Lincoln, since we haven't had a good entry into the Lincoln logs in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we're due. It feels like there's a proper prompt.
Okay, so there's two parts of this that are going to sound unbelievable about Lincoln.
Okay.
The first part is that just straight up, he never went to law school.
Lincoln never went to law school?
Lincoln never went to law school.
Is it because
Lincoln
invented law school?
He invented, like, technology school, basically, as far as I'm concerned. He did not go to law school, which isn't, like, mandatory for being president and, you know, like, making laws and stuff like that. But he never went. However, that didn't stop him from practicing law, because he did still practice law as a... he had an office where he practiced law for a while, despite never passing the bar. No. He did pass the bar.
He passed the bar.
Did pass the bar.
I'm like the movie Catch Me If You Can is like rattling through my brain right now, and I'm starting to wonder if, like, Leonardo DiCaprio and Abe Lincoln are, like, quietly, like, you know, like, he is just a reborn. Like, Leonardo DiCaprio was just Abe Lincoln reborn.
He's just Lincoln again. Yeah, Frank William Abagnale Jr.
I know. I went to Leonardo DiCaprio as the actor, but
he's a real person. He's still alive, I think. Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah, Lincoln's big con was, I'll just be president, and then I'll literally print my own money, okay? How about that? That doesn't have to be counterfeit at all.
Oh, man.
I'll just do it. Did pass the bar exam, did practice law, even though he didn't go to law school. But what's impressive is that he passed the bar exam, but only ever spent 18 months in formal schooling throughout the course of his entire life.
What?
Lincoln!
How does he do it?
I don't know, man. This guy was just, he was something else.
He was something else. Like, you know, it's just like, you hear the story of, like, and maybe, like, I have not consumed Hamilton in the same capacity that I know many other people have, in terms of, like, listening through the entire soundtrack, or like going and seeing the play in real life, or, you know, watching it on Disney Plus or any of those types of things. Like, I have watched it before, and I know, like, the premise of it and how extraordinary of a person Hamilton was, even from, like, a young age, to where, yeah, like you could clearly see that this was somebody who, like, maybe was just destined to make it to where they made it to.
Yeah.
But it feels like with Lincoln, it must have just been, like, abundantly clear. Like, if you met him, if you knew him at any age of his life, it seems like it must have just been, like, you're different.
This guy.
Like, there is something, like, you're doing things, yeah, in a way that's...
Yeah, see this kid who just rowed his own boat that he built out of his bare hands in the town down the river?
Right. Yeah, it's like, yeah, like, how'd you get here? It's like, oh, I built a boat. And it's like, yeah, that's not an answer that most people give.
It's not. Also, I have a patent for the boat, and I'll, in the end, be the only U.S. president who has a patent, and it's for this boat.
Here's so. What... Okay, you know, I have talked in the past about wanting to write a book. At some point in time, what I'm going to do is write a fantasy novel that is Lincoln's life. Spoilers, it's just all factual.
It's all factual. What you're going to write is just a biography.
Right. It's a biography. You will be fooled into believing it's a fantasy novel.
We market it as a fantasy novel.
Right, yes. Yeah. In reality, just the real events.
Just the real events. That would be so funny. Like, what would you title your fantasy marketed Abe Lincoln true fact biography?
Okay. Let's think here. There's gotta be, what are some good D&D words? Of course my mind is stuck on Name of the Wind. So I'm like, the bard, but you know, he's not a bard. I don't think that he's
a grappler.
He's a grappler. So is that like, what would be his class?
Like, I think just a fighter.
A fighter? Is that just a class of,
I think, like, that's a class in D&D.
Okay. So Abe Lincoln, fighter, tall, justice oriented.
Right.
Good at building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Patton, okay. Mm-hmm. Pirate, something in there, maybe.
Oh yeah, I don't know. Okay, I think he'd have to be a little piratey.
Little piratey, sure. At least in the title.
As far as you go. Certainly there's something out there. I feel like it's on the tip of the tongue.
Yeah. All right. Abe Lincoln, Sky Pirate.
That's it. I mean, that's it. You know what? Let's just leave it there.
There you go.
That's
totally Abe Lincoln, fine. Sky Pirate. You just read it and it's like, this is fiction. And you'd be like, nope.
Nope.
Just, you've been tricked into learning, fool.
The best way to learn, truly.
I know, right?
Do you ever feel like you didn't realize how fun learning was because of school?
Oh, abso-frutely, Ben. Absolutely. You don't realize how fun learning... Look, like, you know what? I remember just sitting in English class and then go through and then tell you about, like, how all these, like, great American authors, like, put all the symbolism in their book and how this book seems like it's about this, but actually it's about this. And there's a green light at the end of the dock, and this is why they stabbed themselves at the end of Romeo and Juliet. Did you know they referenced the queen in this line? I couldn't even tell you what King Lear was about, but here's the thing.
That was, like, great. Yeah. Just a good rant.
You guys got it? You guys know what I'm talking about? I honestly don't know what King Lear is about. We did an entire section of it.
But, like, that's the thing, though, is that, like, you know, you get, like, the problem is that you take these pieces of literature that are referencing all of these, like, real world things, but those real world things are things that you haven't, like, really learned that well in history yet.
Right.
And so it's like, oh, did you get that was a reference to blah, 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 blah? And it's like, no, I absolutely did not. And even you telling me that just sounds more confusing because I don't know what that is.
Right. It's like the secret is that English class is really just like a second kind of history class that involves you learning about the events that make this book make sense. But it's like presented in such a way that, like, as far as you're concerned, you're in English class and you're supposed to be learning, like, about the book, and it's like, okay, I want to get back to the book, and you keep talking about all this other stuff instead, and it just feels like not what the book is. And it's like, it is what the book's about, but it's like there's like a disconnect
between I know
why you're learning about it and, like, well, okay, then why wouldn't we just be learning about that instead of reading the book? It's like you're learning about this so you can appreciate the book, when really you should be able to, like, read the book and appreciate, like...
None of it ends up happening is the problem, because, like, you don't know the history well enough to appreciate what the book is attempting to do. And because you can't appreciate what the book is attempting to do, then it also makes the book not very interesting in the first place.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Yes.
So, like, for example, one of the things that you could, if you've listened to my many tirades over the past however many years, 10 years of being on the interweb, one of the movies that my wife Alice and I had like one of our first early disagreements over is The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Okay, yeah.
And it's one of these things that like, it's not like I'm trying to go out of my way to not have like an avid appreciation for it. Like there's literally something about the art style that like as a small child, I remember going over to one of my best friend's houses, watching it at a sleepover, having to call mom and dad to come and pick me up because I was absolutely just like utterly terrified.
Yeah, by the art style.
By the art style. Like, I mean, especially like the scientist guy that like created Sally. Like,
yeah.
His whole aesthetic just like gives me like to this day as an adult.
The jeebs.
The jeebs.
Yeah.
Proper. But someone has once just recently explained to me sort of like what Tim Burton was really like going for with The Nightmare Before Christmas. And like when you start being able to like kind of put those pieces together, it's like, I do kind of get it because Tim Burton was working like at Disney where everything is like Christmas land. You know, it's like it's all bright and colorful and fun and happy and all of these things. And Tim Burton himself sees himself more as like living in like Halloween land where everything is kind of like dark and edgy and scary. And it's just sort of like the way that he like approaches and views the world or whatever. But basically, it's like, you know, if Tim Burton is Jack and he's like being told that like, hey, this Christmas land is so much better. It's like he's like attempting to go and take what he can from Christmas land. But like in doing so, he like does it incorrectly because it's like not being true necessarily to like who he is. And it's like when someone finally gave me that explanation for the story, I was like, I get it. Like, I can see where if you're, and especially if you've seen any of Tim Burton's other stuff and you know, like his general aesthetic and style and like approach to things and stuff, like it always sort of, at least to me, kind of has that like hard edged, a little kind of creepy,
right?
You know, whatever. And in trying to figure out how to like best implement your talents at a company like Disney, it's like, chances are you feel like you're going at your work with two hands tied cleanly behind your back.
Right.
But like from my perspective forever, whenever I watched the character of Jack, I was always like, this is like the super charming, enthusiastic, like member of town that everybody looks up to. And he was able to sort of like sway them all to like this new style of like behavior and things they were supposed to be doing. And in doing so, he's causing like a lot of harm through things like kidnapping and, you know, like what, like whatever else. And it's like, it, you know, what the impact that he's doing through like his own raw enthusiasm, like, it's a little scary, you know, that like somebody could be so looked at that people take their approach to things. They're like beyond reproach, you know, it's like, no, like Jack told me to do it. Like, of course it's okay.
Right.
It's like, I kidnapped this guy, but like, that's, Jack said it was okay.
It was good.
Yeah.
Great.
And so,
good.
Like whenever I look at, you know, it's like you start to get into those like really dicey waters. So for me, I had always interpreted the story on the basis of the story, not looking outside of it and the creator of the story and like why.
Right. And it was like any sort of commentary about like Disney or something.
Exactly. Yeah. And then it's like, once you do understand that, to me, it gives me like such a greater level of appreciation. But the point I'm trying to make here is that like, I also have lived through watching Disney movies my entire life. My career is also at least moderately oriented around them. I have like my working knowledge of the pieces of the puzzle are all very good. So when somebody explains to me what they were attempting to do with this story, it's like, oh, okay. All of it makes sense. I can see who is who and they are, you know, this and that is there and all the rest of it. And then it's like, oh man, now I really appreciate it. But it does bring about just like a very interesting question that I think is like so common in media right now to sort of like kind of take the conversation in a slightly different direction, which is this emphasis on like referential stuff.
Yeah.
I know that we've talked about this, like, I think in like some of our movie reviews and stuff like that before, but I remember just last year walking out of Spider-Man No Way Home thinking like,
yeah,
mind blown. Like that was so much fun. Holy cow. Like it doesn't get any better than that. And, but then as like, you know, as I like let it simmer for like a few weeks, months, whatever, it's kind of like one of those things where I'm like, you know, what if you were just like 12, 13, 14 years old, you're kind of just getting introduced to like the superhero genre, maybe even just being allowed to like go and consume,
right,
you know, PG-13 movies.
Yeah, like if you just turned 13 and this is the next Marvel movie that came out.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like you might go into that and you know, see Andrew Garfield, see Tobey Maguire show up and sort of be like, okay, like who are these other Spider-Men?
You know?
Like spoilers, by the way, sorry. I think it's been long enough.
I think everyone knows.
But like, it does occur to me that take out what I knew about these things and would I have loved the story so much? And it's difficult to say.
It's difficult to know. Yeah. Like if you are like, it's like, what does any Spider-Man fan know about Spider-Man going in? Or if like, are you like, you know, even had I never seen another Spider-Man movie, I'd probably still know about Doc Ock and like the Green Goblin in general as Spider-Man villains.
Yeah, you certainly could. Yeah. I mean, but again, probably a small basis of still like referential stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like assuming you almost have to go into, cause this is how, like, I would say I went to Romeo and Juliet,
yeah,
you know, like, it's like, I don't know Doc Ock, you know, from the Green Goblin. Like, I don't know anything.
Right.
So like me reading Romeo and Juliet, all of these references, it's like, maybe they're brilliant. I don't get them.
I don't know. Yeah.
You know, and then someone then maybe after the fact explains it to you. It's like, oh, well, you know, back in like, you know, the early 2000s, the first Spider-Man you saw, that was Tobey Maguire. So he played Spider-Man. It's like,
right.
It's like
you can actually watch those movies. And in those movies, the Green Goblin and Doc Ock are in those movies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then depending on who you are after the fact, you might be like, oh, that's kind of cool. Or you could be like, yeah, but like, does that mean I had homework? Like going into this, or that like I needed to like
actually, there's a really good comparison for specifically Spider-Man.
Okay, give it to me.
Okay, it's actually just Spider-Man into the
Spider-Verse.
Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Right. Where so like if like what if you found out today that actually, unbeknownst to you, there was a like Spider-Gwen movie and a Spider-Pig movie and a Penny Parker movie. Like all the other ones you just sort of get tangentially introduced to.
This is true.
And it's like they popped onto the scene, like they gave you the one more time, I'm the one Spider-Man or whatever.
Right.
And it's like, you know what? Like if I found out that today, I would be like mind blown. Like there's so much more I could have gone to watch, and like I would probably go watch those things.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Those things don't exist. But the fact is, like, not knowing anything about those characters did not impede my enjoyment of that movie, which has a very similar plot where just other spider people get pulled into the main universe.
This is very true. This is very true.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are the questions, though, that I think are kind of, like, interesting to apply, because it also ends up being the case. I mean, you could apply it to The Nightmare Before Christmas again. It's like forever and ever and ever, like I was never told or like nobody had ever adequately explained to me like what this film was about. And honestly, as a child, I wouldn't have cared who Tim Burton was.
Oh, for sure. Right. You know, like you're just there like, this is just creepy animated claymation movie.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. It's like for me at that age, it's like, I'm not capable of really thinking a whole lot about how Tim Burton may have felt like a slight fish out of water working at a company like Disney. Like, you know, 9-year-old me doesn't get that at all.
Right.
You know, and so then maybe there's a question too there to where it's like, then does the movie work on like just, you know, base level entertainment value? And there's probably, you know, that could be a huge debate anyway, because like again, as a kid, it scared me.
Yeah.
And so it's like I'm not trying to, you know, come after anybody who loves it or anything. All I can tell you is just my own personal experience,
right,
with the thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, but then like I think as you approach, like, you know, we're talking about like real broad strokes, real blockbuster style, like films, movies and stuff like that. But when you get into a lot of films that might be like considered more for like Best Picture, you know, or like film festival winner type things,
right, yeah,
and stuff like that, it's all of a sudden you've taken several steps away from this like, yeah, but did you read the comics? Because if you did, then you totally would have understood it. And it's not this like gatekeepery type of, you know, fandom world that's existing anymore. It's just like, it just also becomes true that the Tim Burton analogy applies to a lot of like art films where it is speaking to something.
I think that's almost like, yeah, it's like it, you almost like know that going in though so much of the time, because it's like the fact that it is like, you know, maybe like an indie film or up for Best Picture or something. It's like it's hitting those qualifications because that movie had something very specific to say, like
a commentary.
Like heavy commentary is implied to be the reason this movie was made. We didn't just make it to just have made it.
Right. So my question is, what is the difference between like that commentary, the source material for that commentary, and Tobey Maguire and the source material for why Tobey Maguire is significant to this story? Mm-hmm. You kind of see what I'm saying? Like one of them feels a little bit like, while incredibly brightly colored and fun and entertaining, maybe on the surface, like a little bit like cheaper, so to speak.
I think because you need to have like physically consumed something else to get the full effect of what Tobey Maguire showing up in Spider-Man is about. Like, you might be able to watch and just be like, oh my god, there's two more Spider-Man, that's cool,
right?
Like, oh yeah whatever. But like, yeah, you will need to have watched the Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies to have seen that, whereas typically, like, in another sense, like, you don't need to have seen another movie, but you do need to have probably it's more like an observation on life or an experience that is like a shared human condition that, right, like helps you understand it, or just that, like, here's someone who is otherwise like you, but now you can see, like, even though their circumstances are almost parallel to yours, this one thing is different, and now what if that one thing was different in your life, and now how terrible or good or whatever, you know, transpires in the movie.
Right. And so really what it comes down to though for me is almost like, what are those, like, while those prerequisites are incredibly different from one another. So again, like, one of them is watching Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. The other one is like understanding this like common shared experience amongst all humans. It's like they are still on some level both prerequisites, like, or maybe even just the simple knowledge of what the director is trying to tell you, mm-hmm, is still a prerequisite.
I think maybe that sometimes I feel like that's really what they're trying to teach you in English. It's like, it's not really important that you know that Shakespeare was referencing the Queen with this line in this particular thing. Like, you'll need to know that to pass the test in this class. But what you really, really need to know is that when you read a book, the author had something more to say than just what the story was.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And I mean, I do think that that is like the underlying like function of a lot of like early learning that you're doing. It's just like you're just building like problem solving pathways. You're right, trying to establish inside of this, like, you know, child's mind to look beyond, you know, like,
yeah,
like there is more to see than the simple words that are like laid before you.
And right.
Like, stories are not typically just stories. They do typically have some meaning,
yeah,
you know, like kind of beyond the story. So I don't know, it's all very interesting, and I actually think it could be like a nice little segue here, because I have another conversation I want us to talk about that I think fits nicely, because it goes back to my psychology 101 class.
Oh boy.
In college.
Okay.
And you know that I love a good conversation about how the mind works and such.
No doubt.
I think this one is kind of interesting, but I do remember when I was in college and learning about it that for some reason, I got so stuck on this term in a way that never actually allowed me to like pay it any real attention, like just because the word they chose. And it reminds me of this one line from Name of the Wind where like they're talking about like why they refer to their magical abilities as like Ailer.
Ailer and sympathy and
You know, versus just like basically calling it like strength of will. And they say we have to have impressive sounding names for things, otherwise nobody will take us seriously.
Right.
You know, it's like we call it Ailer because like Ailer sounds impressive, but right, like strength of will is just kind of like, that's just words.
Yeah,
you
just know? Try harder, man.
Exactly. Yeah. So the terms that came up, and I remember even like writing my study notes cards for these, like my flashcards, are it's your locus of control.
Okay.
And there are two types of this. It's internal versus external locus of control. Now, I will tell you that when we were kids, the locusts, the insects, mm-hmm. came out of the ground. Like, it's like one in every 17 years, like, these things arrive.
Yeah.
Like the cicadas.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
And
so, you thought it was locust.
I didn't think it was locust. I just, whenever I saw the word, it was all I could think of.
Oh, okay.
It was just like, I was like, I wonder what this has to do with bugs. You know, and it's like, nothing at all. Locust is just, I think, some type of like Latin word that goes back into something else, and that's why they call it that. But anyway, internal and external locus of control, I think, are kind of interesting because they're sort of, in a way, similar to like whether or not you're an introvert versus an extrovert, which I feel like any early, you know, conversations, you know, lighthearted stuff you have with people tends to be like, you know, I'm a bit of an extrovert, or, you know, like, nah, I'm an introvert, like, whatever. It's an easy way to tell somebody a lot about how you might interact in social environments or right. whatever. Maybe it's just because people are near me and that's why these topics come up. I don't know right. if other yeah. people actually talk about it at all. The point is, though, is that there's really like you can be, have a strong external locus of control, external or a strong internal locus of control is what I'm trying to say. But it doesn't mean that you can't have both as well. It's in the same way that you could be an extrovert in certain social situations and an introvert in other ones, just sort of depending on
yeah.
how those particular things, you know, strike you in that particular instance. So anyway, let me try to give it some definition so we know what we're talking about here. Your locus of control, is basically like how you believe the outcomes of your life are being sourced. So internal is very like you are the one in control of the outcomes of your life, and external is very like the world is in control. So a couple of examples might be something like for internal locus of control, studying for a test. You might say like, I did well on the test because I studied hard.
Right, like you had control of the outcome.
You had control of the outcome. You put in work, you got a result. That result is the product of the work that you put into it. On the flip end, someone with an external locus of control might say something like, I did well on the test because it was easy. And in this particular instance, they're putting it outside of themselves. It's like they may have studied very hard for the test, but they're still asserting that the reason that for their success is that the test itself just wasn't challenging enough.
Right.
Like another example of it for internal could be like, I didn't get the promotion because I didn't work hard enough. Versus external might be something like, I didn't get the promotion because my boss doesn't like me.
Right.
And again, like this is a situation where it's like both outcomes are exactly the same. It really just has to do with like what your interpretation is as to why that particular outcome came to pass. Like,
yeah.
you know, is it more likely that you are going to go, like find something like about yourself, like, oh man, I should have studied harder, or I could have showed up earlier for work for the past, you know, month, knowing that this promotion was potentially on the line, or something like that, you know,
yeah.
like you might go like that way, or versus the external, it's kind of like, oh my gosh, like, you know, they're like, it's just because those other two people are like, those two people are friends, so of course, you know,
right,
like whatever,
outside my control. And it's like the truth of the matter is that like sometimes both of these things might be true one way or the other.
That's also, you know, true.
Like,
yeah.
It might be true that your boss doesn't like you, and that might actually be the reason why you're not getting the promotion.
Exactly.
However, it sounds like this is much more like, it's your internal perception of why things are happening.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right. That's a really good way to say it. Like,
yeah.
This is not to say that like you didn't get that promotion because your boss doesn't like you, and it's not also true that your boss doesn't like you. It's like,
right.
that could actually be what happened.
Right. But you might have not gotten that promotion because you didn't work hard, but you believe it didn't happen because your boss doesn't like you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really like sort of like your state of mind.
It's like a little rat. My guess, and I don't know, is that a lot of people are having internal locus of control about positive things happening in their life and an external locus of control about negative things happening in their life.
I succeeded because I worked hard. I failed because of the
environment. Because of other reasons. It's not my fault that things are going wrong. It's only progress. Yeah. All of my successes are my own doing and none of my failures.
Yes. Yes. And so I guess I was curious, and I didn't know, like, as I was typing this into the show notes, I saw that you had like followed up with a comment or two. And so I was curious, like, do you feel yourself as though you lean one way or another like, within these bounds?
I feel like I've experienced all four versions of this, where like I would have positive outcomes that I felt I was responsible for and positive outcomes that I felt like I was not responsible for, and then negative outcomes in the same way.
Yeah.
And like, for example, I've just been thinking about this as you were talking about it, like growing up a lot, like people would constantly tell me that I was like a really strategic person.
Okay.
And like that's why I would like win games, or like why I don't know, but this would constantly be told to me.
I mean, it is something that I know I have even said the words to you on this very show before.
Right. And it's just like, and it's like, I do enjoy like strategy games and I do enjoy games like that, but it's not, people would tell me that and I don't, and like, I rarely believed it about myself.
Interesting.
Like, I was never like staring at like a chessboard and like watching the pieces move around, like, you know, Beth Harmon on the ceiling or something.
In Queen's Gambit. Yeah.
Like I'm not, you know, I wasn't, you know, which is not to say like when I play games, I don't like try and like plan out moves and stuff like that. And I think as an adult, I've sort of like further accepted it into like more of, like, maybe that is more who I am. Maybe I'm not giving myself enough credit, but it's like, I feel like a lot of times I didn't always feel that way as a kid. Like, I felt like my success was mostly because like my opponent wasn't really trying, or I got lucky or something.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I mean, this is, it is interesting too, because I think it probably speaks on some level to like some innate ability about yourself to do this thing. Like, so somebody could go and like be like, I'm gonna get really good at strategically thinking, and I'm gonna read all of the books, and I'm gonna do lots of mental exercises, and I'm gonna play a huge amount of chess, and I'm gonna really devote myself to strategic thinking. And I think on some level, probably what this means is that like a lot of this is things that like kind of clicked into gear for you on some level naturally, and probably it's the type of thing where because you were good at it, like with tic-tac-toe, let's say, like, mm-hmm. like you were able to figure out like the ins and outs of tic-tac. Like as a kid, I remember thinking that tic-tac-toe was like a verging on random game.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like we would go and play with crayons on our like, you know, placemats when we go out to eat, you know, and they give you like the paper thing and you play the games or whatever. Like I remember thinking like, oh man, it's anyone's game.
You just sort of put the shapes down and sometimes people get three in a row.
I know. Yeah. 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 It's like, you know, it never, like, I don't think I was putting the pieces together that like putting the X in the middle or even getting to go first was giving you like a rather significant.
Oh my gosh. If you don't go first, good luck.
I mean, that's fair. Yeah. Like basically you have to, yeah. Anybody who has like a whole lot of bearing over it. But I wonder if this parlayed very nicely for you as time went on, because like let's say you started with something as simple as tic-tac-toe, but then that maybe got applied to something like Monopoly, which then got applied to something like chess, which then got applied to something like, you know, so on and so forth, like till you started actually playing like higher level things. But because you were always maybe like a couple of points ahead, it was also allowing you to gain confidence in this arena, which also then sort of like continued your spread to where at some point in time you had like a slight edge on everybody, but then as time went on, that kind of grew into like a rather considerable edge.
I see. So I guess, yeah, I see what you mean for sure. Like, let me ask you this. Would you count this as part of being like strategic then? Like sometimes, like if I like start playing like a new, discover a new game with like a group of friends, like I remember once upon a time, we started playing the game Dominion, which is super fun. You like buy all these little pieces and they go into your deck and you shuffle and draw a new five. It's like the further you build your deck, that's like your little Dominion and you're trying to be the most prosperous or whatever. Yep. Super fun, super fun. I love trying to figure out like what was like the best combination or like a really efficient way to win the game. The answer is big money, especially for the base set.
Nice, nice. Yeah,
anyway. But like I would love like experimenting with it, but like the fact is you can just go online and people have like mathed the crap out of this game.
Sure.
You know, and it's just like, oh yeah, if these two cards are in the bank for you to buy, you can just pretty much do this combo and that's pretty much it. You know, like if your opponents don't see what you're doing or don't recognize it and try and stop you, like you're just gonna steamroll them. You know, that's pretty much it.
So is what you're asking like, does it count as part of like the strategy that you thought to look in advance to see what the mathed out version is?
Right. Yes.
Like
I can tell you there's a famous there's a famous combo called Workshop Gardens.
Okay.
Where you just buy these two cards over and over, and you use the workshop to get more gardens, and then you can always buy like a bronze piece for 0 gold every turn.
Okay.
And that's the whole game. The whole game is that the gardens card is worth more points for the total number of cards you have. So every single turn, all you do is get more gardens and more workshops and more bronze. And you, by the end, you just have this, every like 10 cards you get, your entire point total like jumps another, you know, 12 or 13 points, depending on the number of gardens you have or whatever.
Okay.
So that's the whole strategy.
Okay.
Just massive deck. And you can just do, and as long as no one else notices it and start, like, you will destroy people. It's like unstoppable.
Okay.
And unless someone else decides, the only way for them to stop you is for them to start buying gardens or workshops as well, which will tank your strategy, but it also means they can't win either. So no one will try and stop you.
Right.
Like, it's just like, well, I'm taking you down with me is kind of the strategy they have to adopt if they want to try and win. Anyway, so that'll appear on the board. It's like, I can pull it off. I can put it together. I can play it. I've won with it many times because people don't see it.
Right.
But it's like, I didn't just like look at the board and figure that out, you know?
Right. And that's fair. Like, so this is like, it's interesting because it means that what I still think it tells me, though, is that probably you know well enough that there are strategies that will succeed to even know to look for them in mm-hmm. the first place. It probably also places some amount of like something on how much you value this type of competitive play that like you would go to that length. It, like in an effort to like be able to be as competitive as humanly possible.
Right.
Because I think like for me, for the most part, like I could win or lose a board game. And for the most part, I generally just assume I will lose anyway, cause I don't have a particularly high like sense of confidence when it comes to that type of thing. So like for the most part, if I'm going to play board games with somebody, primarily what I'm doing is excited to go and see my friends and probably have like a drink while we talk and otherwise like do something that facilitates conversation.
Right.
Like the game is by far and away the least important aspect of the entire experience to me. And therefore it would not even like register to me to think like, you know what, before I go over, I know we're going to be playing these two games. I'm going to like do some research. I'm going
right.
to piece it together. That being said, though, this is not always the case for me. Like, it's just with board games in particular. I can tell you that we have played fantasy football for probably since like 2015 with like a kind of rotating group of, you know, cast characters of our friends and stuff like that.
Right.
And I remember the very first year that I was asked to do it, it was kind of one of these things that like I maybe just like heavily associated with like fraternities or something like that. Like it was the type of thing
like
that
a very kind of like bro activity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Look, like, you know, I really didn't like quite understand it. Like I would watch football and I would see like the little stats and stuff like scrolling across the bottom of the screen. But I was like, I don't really know like what those numbers mean and like why everybody's so excited about this player. And you know, like I didn't get any of it.
Yeah.
But at the time that we played the first season, there was like a buy-in, and the buy-in was, I don't know, it was like $25 or something like that. But at the time it still felt like enough to me to where I was like, you know, I need to take this seriously, like to see if like I can,
yeah, get my money back,
you know, get my money back or win. And so I started doing like a ton of research and finally found a program called like Fantasy Pros. And basically what Fantasy Pros will do is import your entire like league into like this great big like interactive cheat sheet program that like, you know, will stack up all of your characters and like you can go in and like toggle over and see like, okay, out of the available quarterbacks on like the waiver wire, like I currently have like the best possible one for the rest of the season. But for like week two, you know, oh, I could actually like trade one of my bench players for Tom Brady because Tom Brady has a great matchup this week and people are expecting. And like I far and away had like the most waiver wire moves of anybody by a multiplier of like 7.
Right.
You know, the first year, like I did so much more moving around and I won.
Yeah.
And I think it was one of those things where like that was an instance where like I literally almost felt like, and maybe this is like going like external locus or maybe it's a little bit of both kind of depending on how you look at it. Part of it was like, I'm the only one who like decided to take it this far. Like clearly I'm just taking it way more seriously than everybody else.
Right.
And therefore,
but you won.
But I won it. But like in a lot of ways, it was almost like, I was like, that sort of means I'm like cheating though, doesn't it? You know, like, because I've now gone, like I took it so much more seriously and didn't really tell anybody what I was doing. And I did have this particular,
that's not cheating.
And I agree. Yeah. I agree now. Yeah. Like looking back on it and everything,
it's everyone like, could have done that.
Everyone could, like, yeah, like I didn't go through, and it's still, you know, I mean, in a lot of ways it's very random. This was mostly like, I think on some level, I mean, this would be like really starting to like compare apples and oranges a little bit in terms of strategy, but like counting cards, for example, like with poker is not like a surefire way to win every single round. It just tips the chances to win in your favor over the house by like a small enough percentage that over a long period of time, you will slowly accumulate wins.
Right.
And I think that that's basically what it was doing for me. It's like, you know, choosing Tom Brady for game two or something like that, like there's still a chance he could have gone and gotten like walloped in the first quarter and like,
right,
whatever, like, you know, yeah, just sat out the rest of the game and like that's it.
Oh man, my fantasy game last night, Ben, I went into it, I was playing against our little brother Tyler, and the little meter at the top was like, you've got like a 29% chance of winning, and I was like, yeah, that seems about right, this isn't good, but you know what, I won by 1 point. I couldn't believe it.
No way. Amazing.
Unbelievable. I was like, wow. Great times.
Absolutely
good times.
Incredible.
No one cares.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, it's all good. Yeah. I mean, like the fantasy wins, it's like one of those things. If you've never done it before, it actually does become extremely fun. And I have to tell you that like the biggest thing that it always did for me was that like I used to only care about watching sports if my team was playing hard stop.
Yeah.
Like anyone else, and it was just like I literally, like, you know, I don't know these two teams. I don't know any of the players on these teams. I'd like nothing about it interests me. It never made sense to me when people be like, yeah, I just, you know, I parked on the couch this weekend. I watched football the whole day. It was amazing. I was like, you watched more than your team's game on purpose.
Yeah.
But once you're into fantasy, it's almost like, ooh, you know, like the Giants are playing the Chargers. It's like, let's see who I got. Ooh, I have their running back.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you know, and all of a sudden it's like you can watch the game because yeah, there's a reason. So if you ever just needed a reason, if you have like a significant other who's extremely into it and you want a way to care more, I would get into fantasy.
Yeah, I would just do it. Just have your own little fantasy league. Yeah, that's a good way to do it. It will at least give you that. That helps with death a lot.
Yeah.
Because like sometimes if it's like, yeah, Sunday afternoon or something, you know, Washington will play at like 1, they'll have their game, they probably lose, whatever, they're 1-1 right now.
Classic.
Well, you know what, they have a win, so I'll take that. Carson Wentz is tied for most touchdown passes this season with any other NFL quarterback, so it's pretty good. You gotta love that.
Gotta love that.
But then it'll get to like 4 o'clock and it's just sort of like, well, it's sort of this lazy Sunday afternoon. We've obviously already just been sitting here on the couch. It's like, I'm just gonna put on the next football game that's coming on, regardless of who's playing.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna sort of have it on and, you know, probably scroll my phone and look up and watch or whatever. But you know, I'll enjoy just having it on, and like the fact that that game might have players on our teams is just like, oh wait, yeah, let's watch whether or not this Cleveland Browns wide receiver gets some touches. You know?
I know, yeah, exactly. It's like I can now care for one thing, and that one thing is this thing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's like, oh, you know what though? But here's the thing, is that my opponent has the quarterback. So it's kind of tricky. I want him to throw a lot of passes, but only to my guy.
Right. Yeah. How can this work out like so perfectly in my favor? Yeah. It's true. It adds a very fun element. So if you've never gotten into it, you know, then it's worth giving a pass.
Well, even this season, we're using like Yahoo. There's like this little like service. It'll be like, here's potential ad drops you want to do. And then it'll be like, if you want us to tell us what trades would be good in your league based on your needs and your opponents or, you know, your leagues, like you can pay for that service. And I'm just staring at it and just like, I might pay for this. I can see this being really useful. I've never been one to do much trading.
In the history of our leagues, I don't know that any trades have ever happened ever.
I'm sure that I know I've done at least one with our buddy Matthew, but that's not really important to anyone listening right now.
Okay. Either way. Yeah. So I mean, going back to like my fantasy pros, like .com, you know, imported league, whatever thing. It's funny because like Yahoo has just started to like do it.
Yeah.
Like it's essentially the same service. Like you can just do it from the very app. Now they just give you like way more information about all the things and how to be competitive. And as a result, I've absolutely watched like my dynasty, you know, like year one season where I won the Sacred Jorts.
Yeah.
You know, basically slowly tank me right on down. It's like that 50-50 mark. So
let me ask you this though. Have you did that like unbeknownst to anyone else in the league that you were using the software? Like do you assume now that other people in the league use software like this as well? and don't announce it? Or are you just like, man, they're just actually really good at identifying players they need?
That's the thing. It's like, it's very hard for me to figure that out because I still know that I make the most moves of anybody on any league I'm in by like the by such a huge margin.
Right.
Like I absolutely do more like waiver wire picking type things than anybody else. Mm-hmm. Cause they do keep those stats and it's like not close.
Yeah.
So it's either the case that like I am far more susceptible to like one piece of information being like, hey, this player might be good this weekend. I'm like, fine, I'll try it.
I'll do it. Let's go. Know, like,
everything's an opportunity Stream. If you try hard enough.
Yeah.
So it's either that like other people are better at like seeing through the thicket,
yeah,
you know, than I am. They're like, yeah, but you know, he's got like a sprained ankle or something, so you know, probably not.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, let's give it a go.
Yeah.
So it's entirely possible because like a lot of my research now just purely comes from like the stat sheet, not from watching any games, not from hearing commentary, not from like, you know, this is like the new up and coming rookie who's having like a breakout season and
yeah, pick him up now.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Sleeper pick.
Right. You never know with these things.
You never know. Some people, then this was the fight. Okay, so we're talking about stats, though.
Yeah.
Let's steer the conversation back to our favorite topic to close out the pop, Ben. Hike prep.
Hike prep.
Hike prep.
This will be the last week anybody has to hear us talk about hike prep.
Hike prep. Because by the time you're listening to it, we'll be on the hike.
We'll be on the hike. So where if you are listening to this on like the release weekend, know that right now, Jay and I and the GMA are out in the woods, the wilderness.
We are mid-GMA as you listen.
It means new memories are being formed.
The memories, you'll hear all about them.
I'm like, I have literally reached a stage of the GMA friendship where I am fully aware that whenever we do something, it could be exhausting and grueling and difficult and hard and also completely worth it because we will come away with stories no matter what.
Yeah.
Something will happen.
Oh my gosh, Luke was watching. I can't even tell you the name of this cartoon show he was watching this morning. It is so annoying and I don't like it at all. I can't wait for him to be over it. But they were singing one little song and it was like about the characters going on a little camping trip, and their song was literally about like, you forgot a thing? Don't worry about it. You can just wing it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, and it was just like I was like, Beth had just happened to walk out of the room. I was like, Beth, you should come watch this song. But it was like, so I was like, what an interesting lesson to like, feel like you should include in a kid's show. Like, don't, it's a, hey, you know what? Sometimes you're just going to have to wing it and that's going to be okay. Like you can't always be prepared for everything. And knowing that you can't be prepared is a really good way to be prepared.
Right. It's sort of like the fine line between people who are really, really, really good at planning and people who are really, really, really bad at planning, because the people who are really good at planning, typically all the things work out for them because they have it like all figured out in advance. The problem is that like, if one thing goes wrong, then it can be like, having like a like really like finely tuned gears and having like a grain of sand thrown in there, and
yeah,
it's like then things start like crunching because stuff isn't like as good. Meanwhile, the people who have no plan are usually very go with the flow, and it's just sort of like, ah, oh, that's too bad that our reservation got canceled. We'll do something else and it'll be fine.
Right.
It's like both people have their absolute strengths, but you know, it'd be like you just got to be like right in the middle of those, you know.
Yeah, Beth was telling me last night, she's like, I feel like you just have like more mental fortitude than anyone I have ever met. And I was like, I don't know what you mean by that. And she's like, I don't know. Like, you're just content it's going to work out. Like, she keeps asking me all these questions about like how far are you going to hike each day? Like, where are you going to stop? Like, are you going to tell people? Like, do you know like what the distances you're going to go? And I'm just like, I'm just going to get out of the car and start walking.
You want to know what it is, though? Yeah. Like, I mean, there's absolutely no... Beth is on the mark. Like, your superpower is, like... And do not take this negatively, because I think it is, the best thing. But you are, like, so... in the best possible way, content. Like, like with all things, always. Like, and I mean, it's one of these things where, like, it makes me... Like, I will always be, like... I could be, like, driving my, like, you know, like my absolute dream car, and I'll still be like... Yeah, what can I look forward to next? Yeah. You know, like in the meanwhile, I was like, you'll get your dream car, and you're like, dude, you want to know what the best part about life is? I drive my dream car and it's awesome.
Right.
And it's like,
you're really enjoying that thing you own. How is that working out for you?
I'm jealous.
Yeah.
But no, the other thing about the hike is that we are going with our good buddy John Jennings, who I just trust. Like, yeah. And I know it's like one of these things where it's like, I just trust him 100%. All the way.
Yeah.
Like he's like our wayfinder in all things. And it's like, I think we've just had so many experiences. He has such good bearings, and I'm like, we'll be fine.
We're going to be good. Yeah. This is the thing. It's like, I feel like in my mind, it's like, if I was just going on a two night, 3 day hiking trip with camping, like I wouldn't really, like, it's really not that much of an endeavor. Right. I think in particular, what makes this one so hard is that I don't know from personal experience, just hearing all of you guys' anecdotes, is that the specific passage of land we're going over is just particularly grueling hiking in a way that most people might not choose for a 3 day weekend. Like
that's, yeah, you know. I think you're dead on the money too there. Yeah. Cause I've talked to, you know, like Alice has watched me go through all this prep. She's seen me go through this entire journey before and stuff. And I've even thought about it myself. Like, you know, we're doing, I think I mentioned it last time, like the total distance for 3 days is like what a thru hiker, like on the AT, might do in a day.
Right.
Like it's literally, you know, it's kind of interesting because we've made this like huge deal about it. We've talked about it for weeks. Like it's been like, you know, me and yours, like, yeah, we're taking like our lunch breaks, yeah, like run to like the outdoor store, yeah, and pick up.
But if you were going on a 3 day, 22 mile hike, like it's really not that big a deal. I think most of the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the terrain that we're going on is the real big,
yeah,
difference maker thing here.
Yeah. And I think that in a way it's been like, I'm sure it's going to be terrible while we're out there, but in a way it has made me feel like I need to prep like more effectively than I might just for like any other regular camping trip. So here's going to be my, if you're ever find yourself going for a backpacking trip, number one, I've discovered that the act of at least going on the first one is probably going to cost you some money because you got to get all that gear and there's just no way around the fact that it's expensive.
It's one of those things. I mean, there's certainly, you know, like great secondhand opportunities, yeah, like consignment, absolutely, and stuff like that.
You can cobble it together. Here's going to be my advice though. Pick like one piece of your gear, because there's probably like 10 things that like you absolutely have to have between like, you know, stove, sleeping bag, tent, whatever.
Pack.
Yeah. Pack, pot, whatever. Just pick one thing and be like, this is the thing I'm going to get the really, really good version of.
Like you're going to be like, all out?
Yeah. The more you spend, the more it's going to be like expense, the better it's going to be. Like just pick like one thing, because then when you're using that one thing, it'll be like, oh yeah, like this one's awesome.
I got this really good. It's like everybody stand back.
Everyone, okay, stand back. Look.
There's about to be a gold, it's like, glow.
About to be good. So what I got yesterday is I went big on the pot.
The pot.
Cooking pot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There was two pots sitting right next to each other. One was like $20. One was like $70. And the $2 one was like a pound. And the $70 one was like 4 ounces. And I was like, I'm going for that pot.
It's like, so we're going to be out there this weekend. You're like, I feel like you're going to pull it out. Like y'all, almost like y'all looking don't for even
look. Look at this. Like, look, feel this. Lift this up.
Look at my pot. Look at, just, you won't even believe how light it is.
Yeah. It's got, but like having that one thing, I feel like can like instill so much confidence, such a boost of to like, look at this though. I got this one thing and this is like my edge.
Yeah.
I got, you know, got the pot, And it actually, I got a cup that like, folds up into itself, collapses into itself. It is the exact perfect radius to go right inside the pot. It like fits it like a glove. I put it in last night. I was like, that is satisfying. These aren't even the same brand.
Like that's, yeah. It's like you see stuff like that and you're like, is this like a common dimension?
It must be.
Pots are like, you know, exactly 4.78 inches across. So all cups are exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. But so here's my other question. Since we also haven't talked about Diablo 2 in a while,
Ben,
here on the Pop
Throwback.
I'm just so
glad you brought it up. Yeah.
Has prepping for the hike at all felt like building like a character in Diablo 2 to you?
I feel like, I think I said it last weekend that it's almost like going hiking for a weekend is like survival simulator.
Yeah.
You know, it's like once you get out there, it's sort of like, well, now I have what I have.
Right.
And we're going to see how this goes.
How it goes. Now you've left town.
Yes. So, yeah, exactly. You've left town. I know. And so I think that my answer to that question is that, yes, like there's definitely like a big piece of that. Like, because I don't, it's like everything sort of has, it's like little like stat points and stuff like that. Cause there's even things like the idea of bringing a pillow, for example, to like sleep your head on. It's this is like one of those where like a hardened like backpacker might be like, don't bring a pillow. Like don't unnecessarily like carry weight. But at the same time, like I look at it and I'm like, dude, I will sleep better but it will, it's like you're literally weighing these two outcomes.
It is so interesting you phrased it like that, because to me, I bet a hardened backpacker would be like, absolutely bring the pillow. Like you, a novice, would be like, pillow's an easy one to cut. I'll just sleep on the ground.
Oh, sure. Maybe you're exactly right. I mean, this is all like, it's like,
right.
I don't even know. I don't even know what the conventional wisdom becomes. You know, it's like all I know is that I'm attempting to, you look at a piece of gear, you know, and you weigh the pros and cons of having that piece of gear.
Yeah.
You know, it's like on the one hand, you know, like I can maybe sleep better at night. On the other hand, I could like walk better during the day. You know, it's like at the end of the day, sleeping better would probably accommodate for a certain amount of like sleeping. Or yeah, walking better would make up for sleeping better. But you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Like you know, it would all shake out somewhere. And the hope is that like you will sleep better enough that extra rest and like recovery will give you more than enough to then accommodate the weight
of carrying the pillow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's like little things like this. And let me tell you like a kind of funny one, because we did not do this last time. I am planning to do it this time. But like last time I carried a jar of peanut butter. This was like my hilarious, yeah, like that everybody gives me a crap for, because what I really needed was like a, you know, a packet of peanut butter,
yeah,
that I could have like peeled the lid off of, scraped some out, put it on like, you know, a piece of bread and be like done with it, or a tortilla or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a little, like a single serve Jif.
Yeah. Yeah. I could have used my like titanium spork to just spread across a single tortilla. Instead, I brought an entire pack of tortillas and a whole jar of peanut butter, which was just like absolute like lead weight in your pack.
It's so funny that we always joke about the jar of peanut butter. I like in this hike prep, I've been watching I've been like watching videos, like trying to figure out like what kind of food should I bring, which like, you know, what kind of snacks are good, like, because I feel like the food itself is what ends up weighing so much.
I mean, you're talking about at least approximately 2 pounds
a day
per day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, you know, across 3 days, you're talking about like 6 pounds of weight in your 30-pound pack. I mean, that's a considerable percentage.
Yeah. It's a pretty big chunk. It's like you're doing all this math. I'm like, oh yeah, I got a 4-ounce pot. And it's like, yeah, but you got 6 pounds of food.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
So there's that. But like on one of the videos I watched, it was, I guess the guy was doing more of like a full on like through hike or a big section of the Appalachian Trail. And he was like, one of my buddies, like he just brought this giant jar of peanut butter with him. And it was like one of like the Wumbo ones you might get at Sam's.
Sure.
And it was just like, and by the time we finished that hike, he'd eaten the entire thing. And I was like, wow, that's hilarious.
I know. Well, you know, and it's funny. I think the real thing that made it so hilarious in this particular instance was the fact that I pulled out the peanut butter. I'd already eaten like my dinner. We were after like our first day of hiking. I was absolutely spent.
Yeah.
Like the energy it took for me to like, you know, put up my tent, make my meal, hang our like, you know, I think eventually still hang our food like in a bear bag and stuff like that. Like I was just like, I was dying, and I was like, I probably just need some more calories in me. So I, you know, took out a tortilla, spread the peanut butter across it, and I'm like sitting there like trying to eat it, and it like glues my mouth shut.
Yeah.
And so like our good buddy Mike Lawson sitting on the log next to me, and I think he's just kind of like watching me out of the corner of his eye, like slowly like you know, yeah. I cannot consume
right.
it. Like it was so, and I think this is why it was so funny, because like peanut butter is like a pretty, like overall powerful, like it has a lot of like nutrients
right.
in it.
It's got like protein and fat and
exactly. Yeah. Like it's not bad in terms of like that I brought it. It was bad that I brought it and then was unable to like actually get anything from it.
Right.
You know, so it was like having like a can and no can opener or something. It's like, there's food inside of here, but I can't get to it. So,
right.
And it was just cause I think my mouth was just so dry from the utter exhaustion
right.
Of the day. But so as a result, one of the big things that we've talked about, again, sort of like from that campfire perspective, is like you get to the ends of these days and there's like this camaraderie, like element to it, which for me is the underlying and primary objective of all of it, mm-hmm. is to like go and like get to spend like, you know, good quality uninterrupted time like with my close friends. Like that's why you do the thing.
Yeah.
Or at least that's why I do the thing. I'm sure there's plenty of people who, you know, get out hiking and it's just like getting to the top of the mountain, getting to like look out at just pure, you know, green life out there or whatever. It's just like, I would walk 2 days in the woods just for this 30 minutes of this view. You know?
Right.
That could absolutely be the case.
Oh, I mean, it's so interesting. I think I'm more on the side of like, yeah, we're just out there. We're hiking, we're camping. It's going to be fun. Like that's all good. Then like, sure enough, we've already mentioned that this was going to happen and it has already started happening, that our good buddy John's like, we could add on this whole extra section. And it's just like, John, what is the point of adding on the extra section though? We're already going to be hanging out. And it's like, yeah, but we could see this. And it's just like, don't care about seeing that. You know what?
It goes to show though, that yeah, like it must be the case. And how about this, John? We see through you. You want to see the sights. You want to take in the world.
Right.
Meanwhile, we just want to spend time with you.
Mm-hmm.
Have a conversation. Darn
Jeez.
It. Anyway, so I'm totally just kidding. Couldn't do any of it without John. The real thing though is that like we had talked about bringing like a libation of sorts.
Yeah.
So you could get to the end of the day and have something that you could like sort of like sip on, like have like a toast,
right,
so to speak. And so this is like one of those things where it's like there are so many things that you're bringing that you like will split hairs on, like your pot, for example. It's like, you know, 4 ounce pot versus like 1 pound pot. Like, you know, what's the better use of like the funds here? And like, you know, I'm going to spend extra for like the lighter pot. And then it's like, I'm also just going to bring something I don't need at all. And actually is kind of like a hindrance to my overall health.
Yeah. I'm like this. I've thought about, yeah, I was like
pure recreation.
We were at the tech game a couple weeks ago. And just as I was packing, I found this little airplane bottle of Southern Comfort. And I just like, I'll throw this in here. I completely forgot I even owned this.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, we were walking in the stadium and it was just like, all right, let's do a cheers and go in. And I just like threw it back and it was like super easy to drink. And I was like, that was so lightweight. I could bring like two of those on the camping trip and I'll just have one each night. And that'd be like fun. And I'm like, but what will that accomplish? Like, I'm not trying to be like,
oh yeah, you don't want to be buzzed. You don't want to feel anything.
Capacity. Yeah. I will still have to carry the weight. Like, it's not that much, but it's certainly more than zero.
Right.
And when you're trying to like, yeah, shave grams or ounces here and there, like it's probably 2 more ounces or something, maybe 3.
Yeah.
Like, not only will I not get buzzed by it, but there's a potential that like I'm a little dehydrated or something, and adding alcohol to the mix is just going to make things like, I don't see any way in which alcohol is going to be beneficial to me on this.
It's like there's no plus in it. I'm still considering it.
I'm like, there seems to be no upside other than there's maybe some camaraderie. And I'm like, but even then, like, you could just cheers like your water or something. Like, what?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That, you know,
that's extremely fair too. Yeah. Like I think, I don't even know what it is. It comes down to actually a very similar relationship that I tend to have like with coffee as well, which is that like the caffeine is like helpful, you know, like helps you like wake up in the morning and stuff like that. But like more than anything else to me, coffee is like the ritual, you know. It's like, I really love having my morning coffee like with Alice.
Yeah.
You know, and it's almost like it's a moment where there's like a sense of calm associated with, like, coffee is like something that's like meant to have conversation over. Like it has an aura around it to me that I love, you know. And it's like meaningful to me in a way that is completely disconnected from like the functional like aspect of the thing,
yeah,
itself, which again, it's like that goes against all of your other considerations when it comes to backpacking, where everything is functional because you have to carry it.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I don't know. It's just very interesting that this has been like one of those things.
But I feel like coffee is pretty functional on this particular
trip. About in day-to-day life.
Oh yeah.
Like the idea of coffee for me is something that like it's the ritual, not the function.
Gotcha.
But I agree, on this particular hike, I think it will be nice to have the additional function from coffee.
Yeah, I think so. I feel like the threat of potentially having some sort of like caffeine related headache by not having coffee would be
worse. It's preventative.
Yeah, exactly.
Preventative coffee.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the good news is, guys, though, is that we're out on the trails as you listen, mm-hmm, most likely and probably, and hopefully just having ourselves a hooting and hollering good time.
Hooting and hollering good time. Our legs feel great. We've packed adequately and everyone's just having the best time of their life.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, guys, as ever, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. We appreciate it just so very much. I am excited that we have yet another community-driven event right here on the horizon as we kind of step over into the month of October,
yeah,
where we are going to be doing It's called SCB Drawtober. You might be familiar with Drawtober from other, you know, like fandoms, arenas, activities.
The internet at large.
The internet at large, community-based events. But yeah, we are going to be doing one where each day of the month we'll have a different writing prompt, or not writing prompt, I'm sorry, drawing prompt, where you can then take a photo of your artwork and share it with us at Carlin Brothers on Instagram, or else just use the hashtag SCB Drawtober. We will also have a special channel for this in our Patreon Discord server, where people can also share all of their various things. And the kind of cool thing about the Drawtober event that we're going to be doing right now is that over on the Super Carlin Brothers YouTube show, we are in the market for some new artwork to go on the back blue wall that sits behind us.
On and the set. So
the game plan is to select some of the artwork from Drawtober to actually go on the Super Carlin Brothers set. So if you would be interested in joining up, we'll have the prompt or all of the prompts for the month in the show notes for today's episode. So go through and give those a perusal. There are some really fun ones in there. We have some that are kind of like a continuation inspiration from our What If Harry Was in Slytherin series.
Yeah.
One of the ones that our moderators over on Discord came up with that I thought was brilliant was Ben's tattoo design.
Oh yeah, you could design Ben's tattoo maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That is actually one I have to tell you, I am so eager and excited to see what people potentially could come up with for this. So anyway, if you want to go and check that out, I highly recommend it. Again, link is going to be in the show notes to all of the necessary information, or else if you are on our Discord server, you can find the Drawtober channel where there'll just be lots of exchanging of artwork. If you'd like to figure out how to enter the Discord, you can do it at patreon.com/popcornculture and select the $5 tier, which will also grant you access to, after the final pop, an additional 15 to 20 minutes of Jay and I talking after each week's episode. There's a huge backlog. If you sign up just even for a single month, you'll get access to the whole thing. You can just binge listen to all of it if you'd like to. Again, patreon.com/popcornculture. Otherwise, until next time,
pop pop.